Hi, I'm Ruthie,
and I have a recorder.
Tune in Wednesdays from 4 to 5 to Out There. We'll meet people and plants around the streets and paths of Northampton, and we'll think about ways we can share the world. Here on Valley Free Radio, or archived online at weatherbeer.com/out there. Get out if you can, but if you can't get out, tune in. We don't care if they laugh at us. Let them take the bus and need a sickle for us. They can have the Cadillac and T-1-2, but give me my rocket bicycle for two.
No pipeline. All we need is the sunshine. Then everything will turn out fine. We don't need no pipeline. We don't need no pipeline. All we need is the sunshine. Everything will turn out fine. We don't need.
So it's time for Out There. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Got a special show today. Last week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
This show was originally recorded on Wednesday, March 23rd, 2016. So last week would have been March 17th through 20th.
I joined a walk along the proposed Kinder Morgan NED pipeline route. It was about 48 miles. It's really like 53, I think, from Windsor, Mass to Northfield, Mass. But we actually got shuttled a few miles from Greenfield to Turner's Falls. So the overall walk was like 48 miles or something. But there were a lot of people. It was amazingly well organized by the Sugar Shack Alliance. We got fed very well. Thank you to so many people that helped organize that walk. And they walked. There were hundreds of people that participated over the course of the 4 days. And, of course, I took my recorder. So I got lots of recordings to share. So the first day, we started out at the Windsor Town Hall with an amazing breakfast. And then we just started walking. We walked about 13 miles that day heading east. And along the way, close towards Ashfield, there's an older woman with white hair and this brilliant phosphorescent raincoat. Because it was a little bit drizzly off and on, and she was standing in front of her house next to her mailbox waving this big American flag in support of what we were doing. And she gave treats to some of the walkers, I heard, and I spoke with her for a few seconds.
Can I just ask you why you're out here?
Because I can't walk with you. That's why.
And you, this is the land that you grew up on?
Yes. My parents are gone, but I'm local.
Yeah. How do you feel about the pipeline?
It's just an accident waiting to happen. It's going to poison our land. The watershed comes down from Plainfield in two different watersheds, and that poison will seep through if we let them build, because it's just accidents and waiting to happen.
So the first night we stayed at the Ashfield Congregational Church, and there was a giant meal there for us. And afterwards, there was a movie, the new Josh Fox movie. He also did a movie called Gaslands I'll look at my notes later on that. Well, first, though, before I get to the brief interview with Josh, there's an interview with Will Elwell, who lives in Ashfield and is a timber framer and built a little cabin on the pipeline route.
I'm Will Elwell from Baptist Corner Road in Ashfield and lived here about 30 years. I had this inspiration to build a throw cabin after the likeness of the cabin in Concord, Mass. At Walden Pond. And specifically that cabin because Henry David Thoreau actually wrote the book, literally, on civil disobedience. And that's what we're all about at this point. We're trying to be civil but disobedient because it's reflecting our need to express ourselves about the opposition to the pipeline. I'm a timber framer, and so for the last 3 weeks, I've been chiseling away at my shop, creating the frame, and then I dismantled it all and took it to the site where we put it up yesterday. So the point about the site is that I determined from the maps that we have seen from Kinder Morgan we know where the pipeline is proposed to go. And this particular site is very interesting because it's the pipeline proposal veers away from the power lines and the high tension lines. So it's out of the easement area of the power lines, which means there's no jurisdiction of the power lines to prohibit it. And it's on private property, and the landowner has allowed me to put the cabin up on his land. So it has been placed, as far as we can tell, directly. The middle of the cabin is in the middle of the pipeline, right in the way of the pipeline.
So in terms of legal action, what does this mean to have a cabin in the pipeway route?
Well, actually, we got a permit, a building permit to put the structure up. So in order for that cabin to be moved or destroyed or whatever, they have to apply for a permit from the building inspector. And, you know, they have to permitting fees and all that kind of stuff. But the idea, it's resonating with a lot of people because we had probably 50 people there yesterday helping to put the frame up. And it was a beautiful event and gave everybody something tangible to do. Everybody was walking around saying, I don't know what to do. What can we do? They're coming, they're coming. And it's like, well, this is something I wanted to do to really make a visible and tangible thing that we can put in the way of the pipeline. And hopefully it'll become an icon for these resistance.
Is anyone going to live there?
We're respecting the privacy of the landowner. Mm-hmm. Originally he said, well, I don't want people staying there overnight. And then yesterday at the event, somebody said, Larry, what if things get really serious here, what do you think? And he said, well, if push comes to shove, we'll call in the cavalry. And so we're all like, yeah. So right now it's a bare-bone structure. Mainly there's no sheathing, no roof on it. It's just a really beautiful structure. And we're going to leave it like that for the march. And then when I have time, I'm going to go back and put a roof on it and side it and put windows in and, you know, shingles on the siding and all that. So we're hoping that actually eventually, you know, I don't know where it's going to go, but I have visions of it actually becoming kind of like a place for people to come to feel like there's something they can tangibly touch and feel. And actually, there's been talk already of having little study groups in the cabin, you know, maybe about Thoreau and civil disobedience, but maybe about the environment. Community, whatever. It could become a really important structure.
That was Will Elwell from Ashfield. The next clip I'm going to go through is an interview with Josh Fox, who produced the film How to Let Go of the World and Love All the Things Climate Can't Change. You talked about his film for a couple of minutes with me.
So we're really excited to be here at this particular occasion because we're like showing the movie in the middle of an active protest, which is the best possible context. So you guys are walking the route of the pipeline to make a statement, to familiarize yourself with the land. What I'm asking you a question now. What do you think is the essence of this particular mission today?
Well, for me, I don't actually live on the route.
Right.
But it's like when you look at the big picture grid of all these pipelines crossing the country, putting together, making it easy to for the tar sands to be exploited, fracking, all that. It's like I want to say, no, it can't just be this easy to just for gas companies just do everything everywhere.
So. I agree. And you know what? Well, okay, so we've done about 6 screenings over the last 7 days all across New York, some in Pennsylvania and Massachusetts. Everybody's fighting a pipeline. Whether you're in Westchester and they're fighting the AIM pipeline, or you're in upstate New York fighting the Constitution pipeline, or you're here in western Massachusetts and New York fighting the NED pipeline, it's like a constant state of being that people are fighting pipelines. So that's where the fracking fight is right now. This movie it's a spiritual film. It's not about a specific issue with one fossil fuel development or another. But we think that it'll, I think that it'll inspire people on all these fights, right? Climate fights, fracking fights, pipeline fights, tar sands, coal. So we want to show it in this context and to be in the middle of one of this, it's 4-day march, right?
Yes.
So it's kind of like Blair Mountain when they marched the whole, recreated the whole Blair Mountain march. I don't know if you know about that. In West Virginia, there was this iconic 50-mile march to stop coal mining that took place, I don't know, decades ago, and then they recreated it several years ago and marched for 50 miles. So this is pretty extraordinary. I think this is a great crowd. It's going to be a fun time tonight.
Thanks for coming.
Oh, yeah. Well, so all the things that climate can't change, you know we're in for it. Our forests are in deep trouble. We're going to have droughts. We're going to have floods. Extreme weather will continue. We're going to see sea level rise in our lifetimes that will swamp many of our major cities along the coastlines. Those are the things that the climate will change, and they're going to be devastating. So I wanted to focus on what are the things that climate can't change, which are the things that are inside. Our civic virtues, our values, human rights, democracy, courage, innovation, creativity, community, love. These are the things that climate can't change. And if we're going to go forward into this unfolding long emergency, then we're going to need to restructure the way we operate. Our society as human beings right now is based on greed and competition and violence. And we need to start to base our movement and our civilization on other principles. And that's what I've learned from meeting all these amazing climate warriors all over the globe that you'll see in the film.
That was Josh Fox talking about his new film, How to Let Go of the World and Love All the Things Climate Can't Change. He's on tour with it, and the film was showed last Thursday evening at the Ashfield Town Hall. The next few clips are also from the Town Hall, that event.
He represents the first Franklin.
This is Stephen Kulik talking in a minute, being introduced.
From out here in the hill towns all the way over to the Quabbin. It includes Ashfield, Brooklyn, Conway, Deerfield, Leverett, Montague, Shelburne, Shutesbury, Sunderland, Waitley, Chester, Chesterfield, Cummington, Goshen, Huntington, Middlefield, Plainfield, Williamsburg, and Worthington. A number of those towns are in the path of the proposed pipeline. Steve is a strong advocate for us here in Western Massachusetts.
Yeah.
He's here tonight as a partner with us, fighting with us to stop the Kinder Morgan pipeline and promote renewable energy.
Well, thank you very, very much for inviting me, Mary and Bob, and all who have been involved in this march today, this three-day, four-day walk, and all of you who participated in that, prepared it, are supporting it. It means a lot. Mary mentioned in her introduction some of the things I work on in the legislature, but for the last couple of years, nothing has been more important or higher priority than this pipeline stopping it. And what has helped me and my colleagues who have opposed this for the past 2 years, it's really now 2 years since we first heard about this, and the response was so immediate and so deep that I've never seen in my 20-plus years in the legislature. I've never seen a citizen action that's as sustained, that's so well-informed, that is so heartfelt, and that is making such a difference. Believe me, it is. We are all up against an enormous corporate power in Kinder Morgan and all of the utilities that support what they're doing. But I really believe that the power that's in this room and elsewhere that opposes can win in the end. I don't doubt that. I'd like to tell a little story about when Kinder Morgan came to my office 2 years ago in the State House, and I was joined by two of my colleagues, Stan Rosenberg and Ben Downing. Kinder Morgan asked for this meeting to tell us about their wonderful new plans for this pipeline that they wanted to build in Western Mass. And Mary mentioned I have 19 communities in my district. 6 of them are in the direct path of the project. But all of them are negatively impacted, as I think the whole state is, because it's just bad energy policy. But they're sitting in my office, this with the lobbyist and the vice president of Kinder Morgan and some engineer, and they start unrolling all the maps out on my table and saying, and here's, we're going to go from here, New York, we're going to come in, we're going to go up through this town, and, you know, we're going to go up. And that time it didn't go to New Hampshire. It was going straight to Draco. And they were presenting it like it was a piece of cake, that it, this was so easy. Of course, we would want this. And because it's going to give us low energy prices, an abundant supply. And so all the time they're explaining this, Stan and Ben and I are looking at each other, you know, like, this guy's crazy. What are they? You know, finally he stops his spiel. And they said, what do you think? And we said, well, you've got some problems with this, and you do know you're proposing to do this in Western Massachusetts. Of the past, like when they wanted to divert the Connecticut River over to the Quabbin, and when they wanted to build twin nukes in the Montague Plains, and after that, when they wanted to bring Boston's garbage to the Montague Plains. There's been a history of this kind of stuff in Western Mass, and every single one of those other things have been defeated, and they never happened. So anyway, I told them this story about these examples, and the guy from Kinder Morgan says, well, no, not a problem. So we built a pipeline under San Francisco Bay, so we can build one anywhere.
Oh, and is it now?
We are proving him wrong. But they did not expect the kind of citizen reaction. They really did think, honestly, that we would welcome them with open arms and that we wouldn't look at the issues of public safety and environmental health and degradation of natural resources and habitats and our agricultural lands and our forests. They didn't think that would matter, but they matter to you, and they matter to a lot of people around Massachusetts, which is why I think they were really puzzled and stymied by the depth of the opposition and the fact that it's not just not in my backyard. It's really well-informed, reasoned, and heartfelt opposition, and I do think we're going to be successful in the end. But it's not without a lot of struggle, and it's not without actions like you're doing today. So keep this up, and everything is cumulative. All of the little actions that happen, and I think the wonderful example that Will Elwell is going on. So what he's doing is in the best tradition of citizen activism, protesting against strong forces that want to do harm to the public good. So what you're doing is great. What everyone is doing, it really makes a difference. Now, we have a big struggle ahead of us, and I just want to use a few minutes of my time tonight to give you a few updates about things that are going on at the State House that impact this. And things that people have asked me about over the church and outside tonight as I was coming in. Everyone wants to know about the Article 97 bill regarding the Sandusfield project, the Connecticut expansion project. And how many of you came to Boston the day of that hearing? Yeah, a lot of people.
I was there.
That was a great showing. And for those of you who aren't familiar with this project, it's down in Sandusfield in Potomac State Forest, and it is called the Connecticut Expansion Project. And what it is about a three-mile loop, I think, roughly, to store gas for Connecticut in Massachusetts in a pristine Article 97 protected piece of conservation land owned by DCR, state-owned land. So it has no benefit to people in Massachusetts whatsoever. But we see this very much as a precedent for the issue of Article 97, which is the constitutional protection we have for conservation land for open space. And this is something happened today, yesterday and today. That Article 97 bill in the legislature was put into what's called a study, which is basically killing for the session, which is good. It means that land is not going to come before the legislature for a vote to release it for the pipeline down there. But what it also has done by essentially tabling this for the session and killing this bill in committee is that Kinder Morgan was probably anticipating this because this afternoon they took legal action in Berkshire Superior Court to get permission to go ahead and begin constructing their project, even without Article 97 protections removed. The argument they're making is that FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, gave them permission through a Certificate of Public Necessity and Convenience about 10 days ago to go forward with that project. Now, my colleagues and I contend that you cannot, an administrative ruling by FERC cannot override a state constitutional ruling. But it's never been tested before. We're, as far as I know, the only state that has a provision like this in our Constitution. And so Kinder Morgan has now gone to court to say the legislature would not release the land for construction of our pipeline. Therefore, we want the court to condemn that property and allow us to take it by eminent domain and construct it. Right. It's a bad thing, but we're going to fight it. This just happened late this afternoon, to our Attorney General. Maura Healey's been great on this issue. We're hoping that she will step forward right away and take on this fight in court, because this is an issue which conceivably could go all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, which could take years. By that time, hopefully, we'll have a real Supreme Court, right? But again, it could take years, and that works to our favor, because ultimately, I think what will defeat this project, in addition to all of your good activism and all of the sound arguments against it, will be the economics of this project. To spend $5 to $8 billion to bring more fossil fuel into our region, most of which will not benefit anyone in Massachusetts. And I won't even get into the whole issue of export, because that's a whole other evening. But with the price of gas and fossil fuels right now being low, I think it doesn't make sense for Kinder Morgan to build this thing. Hopefully, they will come to their senses. And although our arguments really make sense, they don't hear them as much as they hear the arguments of the bottom line of the dollar. So keep an eye on this issue. I think you'll be seeing it in the newspapers the next few days about the Sandersfield project, because it has a lot of precedence for the Kinder Morgan project here. So I probably already talked too long, but the main reason I wanted to come by was to thank you all for what you do every day, to encourage you to just keep it up. Write letters to your own legislators if you're not sure where they are on this issue. If you have friends and family back in the eastern part of the state who largely are unaware of this issue, let them know how important it is, not just to our part of the state, not just to natural resources and public health and safety here, but how much it means to them as consumers of energy in Massachusetts, because we're not going to get anywhere in the future by increasing our reliance and dependence on fossil fuels. It's not only an environmentally unsound resource, but that it's also highly volatile in terms of price and supply and subject to manipulation by those who control it. Yep. So we want to increase our energy independence, not become more dependent on fossil fuels. The work you're doing is heading us there, it's leading us there. Please keep it up. Please, enjoy the film and keep up your activism. And I really want to thank you for all of it. Thank you.
That was a talk by Stephen Kulik, the state rep from Western Massachusetts, the northern part. That's from a talk that he gave on Thursday, March 17th at Ashfield Town Hall. He was talking to a group of walkers walking along the proposed pipeline route to oppose it, talking before a film by Josh Fox about climate change and love. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Valley Free Radio, WXOJ 103.3 FM. This is Out There. We're going to keep on. I got more clips from the walk for the rest of the hour. Lots of different things. And let's see. So next, here, I'll just play this announcement from the walk.
Another event coming up soon is on March 30th. There's a DPU hearing in Greenfield. There's also one on the 29th in Pittsfield. The one at Greenfield, the Sugar Shack Alliance is planning to vigil out front. If you come at 6:30, the hearing starts at 7. If you come at 6:30, bring signs. It's at the Greenfield Middle School on Federal Street in Greenfield. And come join us then, and you can go to Sugar Shack Alliance or Climate Action Now website to get more information about that.
So the first day of the walk was from Windsor to Ashfield, and when we got to Ashfield, we were having dinner in the Ashfield Congregational Church, and actually, at some point during the day, we were joined by numerous people along the route, and here is one of them.
My name is Josh. I live in Plainfield, Mass., and I'm describing how I came across the Sugar Shack Alliance walk against the pipeline. So I was driving home with my girlfriend. Normal day, we were just bringing groceries back, and I saw all these people marching in Plainfield, which is, I hadn't realized had any kind of activism. That was probably my own fault for not getting the Plainfield Post. So I realized, you know, they were kind of the physical embodiment of stuff that I had been posting about online on Facebook and so on, and this was expedient way to jump into something and try to make a difference outside my house. So I drove back and packed my backpack really quick and had my girlfriend drop me off a few miles from where I'd seen them. And this is day 4. I'm 30-something miles in at this point, and my legs are complaining, but the energy here is so good that I feel like I could walk another 30 if I had to.
I'm going to skip back to day 2. Day 2, we went from Ashfield to Shelburne Falls. We were hosted in Shelburne Falls by the community center and a church. And there was a special event Friday evening at, I forget where it was, the gymnasium in Shelburne Falls. But the Reverend Billy and the Church of Stop Shopping Choir performed, and then a bunch of members from the Stop Shopping Choir, they had come up from New York City, and they walked with us on Saturday. We went from Shelburne Falls and walked into Greenfield. This is the beginning of that day.
It actually makes us look even more powerful to be more spread out.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's going to be a really friggin' long line today, and it's going to look great. Okay? Is everybody cool with that?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's all be safe. Let's be powerful. And we're walking into Greenfield.
It's Saturday morning, March 19th, 2016. I'm on day 3 of a 4-day walk to stop the proposed Kinder Morgan Northeast Direct Pipeline. This walk goes from Windsor in western Massachusetts to Northfield in northern western Massachusetts. Right now we're going from Shelburne Falls into Greenfield along Route 2. There's over 100 of us stretched out along the road with signs and banners, getting a lot of support from passersby. I'm carrying a cardboard sign that someone just gave me that has pictures on it from the Constitution Pipeline in the northeast corner of Pennsylvania and into New York State. Apparently Pennsylvania approved it, but it hasn't gotten approved yet in New York, but they've been cutting down trees in Pennsylvania. And the cardboard sign I'm carrying has several blown up photographs on it of men with chainsaws cutting down the trees. And one picture, there's 3 men. One of them has a chainsaw. One of them has a hard hat and work vest. and one of them has an automatic weapon and sunglasses and ammunition strapped to his thigh. A man that I've been walking with who came up from New York State was telling me that in Pennsylvania, the tree cutting crew that cut down trees for the pipeline came in with government people armed with automatic weapons in case there were any protesters, I guess. But the guy I'm walking with said that all the landowners have just tried to go about it as legally as they can. The gas company will send out surveyors on land that they don't have a permit, that they haven't been granted a permit to survey. And when that happens, he said the landowners will call the local police and say, hey, there's surveyors trespassing on my land. The police will come out and see if the surveyors have a permit. And if they don't, then they get asked to leave, I guess. But if the landowner doesn't see them, then they go right ahead and survey. So that's part of the struggle here. Or that's one of the things that might be happening in Western Massachusetts, I've been told, is that the gas company will start sending surveyors out, whether or not they have permits, and so landowners have to be vigilant if they want to stop that stage of the pipeline project. I want to take a minute before I go back to clips from the walk to say a couple more things about that story from Pennsylvania. There was a particular family, the Hollerins, I believe, who had a maple sap, maple syrup business. And when the tree cutting people came in, initially people from the family and their supporters sort of confronted them or, you know, approached them. It was like, hey, no, don't cut down our trees. And so they turned them away that first time. And then what I was told by people on the walk was that the family and or their supporters found out where the loggers were staying, what motel they were staying in, and what bar they were going out to. And so they went to the bar and hung out with the loggers and got to know them a little bit. One of the loggers told them, yeah, I'm from Oregon, and if people came onto my land to cut trees, we'd meet them with shotguns. And they got, you know, they sympathized, the loggers sympathized with them. And I was told that that initial group of loggers might have, I don't know for sure, but they might have refused to cut down the trees that particular time. But then I heard the gas company, when they filed suit or whatever, then they came back with armed federal marshals and a new set of loggers. So if you just tuned in, this is Valley Free Radio. This is Out There. I'm playing clips from March to Stop the Pipeline. And day three, we were going into Greenfield, and we were met by the expandable brass band, so we're going to have a little band break. They marched with us coming into Greenfield. It was great. I heard there was like 300 people coming into Greenfield. Thank you.
Okay. Hey. How do you like marching with the band?
Hey, all right.
They're going uphill and they're still blowing their horns.
So the next set of clips are from an event Saturday evening at the church in Greenfield.
Lee Youngblood is the executive director of the Mount Grace Land Conservation Trust.
Thank you, walkers. And I want to thank Ben and the Clark family is one of more than 1,000 landowners that's land is threatened to be taken by eminent domain for this pipeline that we don't want and we don't need. And you may have heard that Tennessee Gas has sued the Commonwealth of Massachusetts last week for the right to supersede our Constitution in order to take land in OTIS. We have a right to clean air and water in this state. So the legal fight is heightening now, and I hope that you'll consider supporting various groups, including Mount Grace. There is only so much that we can do. We've been thinking a lot and strategizing a lot, but the fight is now in the courts, literally. So in OTIS, the legal fight is about two parcels of Article 97 land. And I'm going to read the following list of places that would be affected by another project, the NED. All of the names I'm going to say would be affected by the single NED project. So the route might change. Some of these places might not be affected because they move it around, but there'll be other conservation parcels affected. And it's the magnitude that I want you to feel. And I was inspired by the first speaker to ask you to hear these names in a spirit of prayer. Beginning on the New York border, Pittsfield State Forest in Hancock, the historic Constitution Hill Conservation Area in Lanesboro, Square Roots Farm, Pittsfield State Forest in Lanesboro, Windy Ridge Farm in Lanesboro, Chalet State Wildlife Management Area, Cheshire, another part of the Square Roots Farm in Cheshire, the Appalachian Trail in Dalton, two tracks of the Barden Farm in Dalton, Chalet State Wildlife Management Area in Dalton, Holiday Farm in Dalton, four tracks of the Misanti Farm in Dalton, the Crane Family Conservation Restriction in Dalton, Pittsfield Watershed Land in Hinsdale, two tracks of Windsor Brook Watershed Easement in Hinsdale, Peru State Wildlife Management Area in Peru, Windsor Brook Watershed Easement in Peru, and near the compressor site in Windsor, Notch Creek Reservation, owned by the Trustees of Reservations. Two more tracts of Peru Wildlife Management Area in Windsor, the Smithers CR Land, the Upper Westfield River State Wildlife Management Area in Windsor, the Warjaz Farm in Plainfield, West Mountain Wildlife Sanctuary, owned by Mass Audubon in Plainfield, Bear River Farm in Asheville, the two tracts of the Lily Farm, Jim Cutler's CR Land, the Martin Farm in Asheville, the Shawcross Farm in Conway, South River State Forest in Conway, the Melnick Farm, two tracts in Deerfield, the Pepper Farm in Deerfield, three tracts of the Williams Farm in Deerfield, the former Bitzer Farm on Hatchery Road in Montague, the Montague Plains State Wildlife Management Area, Montague Water Department Land, Montague Watershed Protection Area, Poplar Mountain Town Conservation Area in Irving, Old State Road Town CR in Irving, Mount Grace's Poplar Mountain Tract in Irving, and near the Northfield Compressor Station, Brush Mountain Town Conservation Area in Northfield, Northfield Town Forest, two tracts of Northfield Mount Hermon Schools Conservation Restricted Land, three tracts of the Northfield State Forest, the New England National Scenic Trail in Northfield, Sam and Barbara Richardson's CR land at the top of Alexander Hill, where they let people sleep in a cabin built by the National Park Service for free and wake up to a gorgeous view. Morse Memorial Forest in Warwick, Brooks Crossing Conservation Land, Town Conservation Land in Townsend, Squanicook River State Wildlife Management Area, two tracts of the Willard Brook State Forest in Townsend. This is one project. Lunenburg Conservation Area, Methuen Conservation Area, Methuen Rod and Gun Club, Andover Conservation Area, Hartstone Village Conservation Area, Pheasant Ridge Green Area, Shawshing River Conservation Area, Apollo Park in Wilmington, Wilmington Pumping Station, Wilmington Wellfield, Wilmington Water Department Land, Cedar Swamp Conservation Area, 6 tracts of the Chestnut Street Conservation Area in North Reading, 2 tracts of the Martins Brook Conservation Area in North Reading, 2 tracts of the Cedar Swamp Conservation Area in Reading, Linfield Center Water District, Harold Parker State Forest, conserved in 1917 in Tewksbury, the Ritchie CR Land in Draycott, the Smith Healy Farm in Draycott, the Norris Brook Water Department Land in Peabody, the Norris Brook Wetlands in Peabody, that'd be 4 tracts, and the Norris Brook Conservation Area in Danvers on the shore of the Massachusetts Bay. So let's fill the Berkshire courtroom at 10 o'clock on March 30th in Pittsfield and uphold our Constitution.
That was Lee Youngblood from the Mount Grace Land Trust reading a list of all the conservation lands that would be affected by the pipeline on its current proposed route.
I want to introduce to you now Lisa McLaughlin. She is a consulting cultural anthropologist doing field and historic research on Native American ceremonial stone landscapes. She serves as a board member of the nonprofit Nalum Becca Project and on the Northfield Historical Commission. Please welcome Lisa McLaughlin.
The Nalum Becca Project is a nonprofit dedicated to the protection of Native American cultural sites. I am not a lawyer, but much of how we as a society interact with the land and with each other comes down to law. Our first clashes with Native Americans occurred over the land due to the incompatible European belief that the land could be divided up and owned. That essential difference has never gone away, and I think that it is at the root of what we're dealing with here. So I want to share with you what looking at the proposed pipeline from this perspective as a clash of cultural forms reveals as at stake, and I hope to get you thinking more about how to use whatever influence you have at the local, state, or federal levels to balance the playing field. There are many Native American cultural sites being threatened by the pipeline. These include, foremost, burials, which, according to Kinder Morgan's environmental impact report, are expected to be found and disturbed. So I hope that this is something we can agree is not acceptable. One important law that applies is Massachusetts General Law 114, Section 17. Preservation of Ancient Burial Places, which says that burial grounds over 100 years old cannot be used for any other purpose. To change this law would require a two-thirds vote of both houses of the state legislature, just like Chapter 97, and it is not likely that FERC will bypass this provision. So this is one place where we can all come into the process, as each of us has a voice with our state government. The second type of sites at risk are ceremonial stone landscapes, which is an ancient interconnected network of stone structures. It includes cairns, chambers, celestial alignments, still in use today. Close by, right here in Turner's Falls, we have a nationally registered Native American ceremonial site of this type, and its associated district. So the district is 16 miles radius, which includes Northfield, Deerfield, Greenfield, Irving, and Heath. While listing on the National Register doesn't give the sites any guarantee of protection, it does mean that the proposed project proposer has to justify to FERC that their destruction outweighs the importance of these sites to the cultures that value them. In addition, the National Register listing bolsters the requirement under the National Historic Preservation Act, Chapter 106, that any affected traditional cultural property must be discussed with representatives of that culture. And this applies to Native American sites as well as those belonging to other cultures. For example, the French American population of Turners, the spiritualists of Lake Pleasant, or the motorcycle enthusiasts in Montague Plain felt that their material historic culture, so that's over 50 years, was being adversely affected by the pipeline, they too have the right to weigh in with what those losses would mean to them. although the tribes have a federally recognized special sovereign nation status that goes beyond these other relationships, they still have a say. So finally, the naturally sacred geography, the landscape as a whole, as well as individual sites such as waterfalls, are at great risk. The Native American Religious Freedom Act makes it illegal for the feds to block Native American access to places they need to visit to practice their religion. And this is something to keep in mind as you think about what's at stake in this clash of cultural value systems. Native Americans living here today, and those with ties to here, are in danger of losing not just their history, but also the landscape, which is still spiritually important to them. Their care of and reverence for this land made it such a desirable place to live. Thank you for being here to help continue this tradition of care and reverence, and let us support the Native American community with our voices and actions. Thank you.
That was Lisa McLaughlin talking at an event on Saturday night in Greenfield, the 19th, an event to stop the pipeline. I'm going to cut through some of these other clips, just mention them. There was also a letter, a statement from Stan Rosenberg that he sent us talking about trying to stop the pipeline, his work to do that, also talking about the FERC and how they're essentially a rubber stamp agency. It's the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and they basically approve all projects, except there was one last week in Oregon that they didn't, which is the first one in a very long time, or maybe the first one ever.
Speaker is Carolyn Shores Ness. She is a member of the Deerfield Board of Selectmen and the Board of Health.
Thank you all for coming tonight. It's pretty amazing to think it was only a couple years ago, and you know, you've gone to the informational meetings that Kinder Morgan had, and they showed us this cute little garage in Southwick. It was 2,000 horsepower. Compressor station, but they didn't say that. They just said, this is a compressor station we're going to build in Deerfield. And I'm like, well, you know, that's not too bad. And then I went to a Mass Coalition, Watershed Coalition meeting, and my friend Carolyn Sellers in Townsend said, oh my God, Carolyn, they are going to put 120,000 horsepower compressor station in Deerfield. And she said, this is what they look like. This is what they're going to do in Townsend. And it was like, oh my God, this is unbelievable, this big industrial site. So that was wild. And that's when we started out trying to fight this pipeline in the town of Deerfield. And whatever expert that we bring from the environmental point of view, they can have an expert that says, oh, we can mitigate it, or it's not that bad. So when Christabel Boniface, a lawyer at Conway, volunteered to represent Deerfield for free, because you know, we hardly cover our budgets, and money is a huge thing. The idea of taking on this corporation as a town, I mean, they really, literally could have swamped us and bankrupt us. So having Christabel being willing to represent us pro bono, we are taking them on from a public health point of view.
So we all know that these lands that we're on right now that are the United States were stolen. It's a result of colonial settler activities, corporations, the earliest corporations, in fact. And as we're going through this, it's important to note that this current representation of corporate expansion is a lot of the same stuff, land grabs, poisoning of land and water and people. Basically also introducing a culture of repression as well as a culture of division through military tactics. So this is psychological warfare that has been honed over the past few hundred years by, I'm going to say, our military in many ways. So, and again, this is just something that needs to be discussed, because this is an assailing process that is an act of recolonization, which means that we can rise up in our opposition, in defiance to this. And some of that stuff is as simple as, I had a conversation with somebody on the walk earlier today about the importance of language and the importance of conducting ourselves and adopting a way of speaking about our connected issues in ways that honor them. We need a lexicon of justice that we're owning. It's an act of defiance, a cultural act of defiance for that matter. So it's something that
Make sure that you're getting this through so that you're not considering natural gas anything more than fracking. So, after us, we're going to have generations that are going to look back and say, you did right. Thank you for not giving up in this moment. Regarding the need for love, we want and need as human beings to feel safe, secure, and loved. And so all of these are basically things that aren't just an endpoint. You know, these are things that we can provide and offer to one another in the moment. It's not something that is some faraway goal that we need to sort of dream about when we're doing it right now. This is an act of resisting domination. It doesn't imply an immediate win. It doesn't even imply winning, for that matter, but it is the right thing to do. In any face of oppression that you can oppose, you take it. You have to do that in the moment. Otherwise, it gets away from you and it perpetuates itself. I'll kind of just close out with honoring our organizers here. Wonderful people that are working on building horizontally connected systems of organizing that are direct defiance to the corporate powers of a top-down system, corporations, large NGOs. So I want to thank the Sugar Shack Alliance folks and my friends out here.
That was Jimmy. I'm sorry, I don't know his last name, but he did the climate march across the country a couple years ago. And he's also involved with an activist group called Beyond Extreme Energy, a very creative acting group. You're listening to Valley Free Radio. This is Out There. I'm playing clips from a walk to stop the Kinder Morgan NED pipeline that happened March 17th through 20th. Democracy Now! Will be coming up at 5 o'clock. Got a few more things to play from the walk. So on day four, we went from Turner's Falls into Northfield. And I want to say thanks to Court Dorsey, I think, and Deneen, I think her last name is O'Rourke, for their music. Music that greeted us as we went on our way.
Dr. Scholes, thanks you.
This is Moonlight Davis, who sang a song in Greenfield. A song that he wrote.
to the men all dressed in tan and blue.
So Matt, you've been learning more about the pipeline and stuff. What are your concerns?
My concerns are that they're trying to bring this pipeline in without a plan. They have no plan for renewables, and if they're going to use a finite source of energy like natural gas, then they better start putting renewables in the mix.
So what are you going to do about it?
I'm going to ask our representative, Jim McGovern, what he's going to do about it, because we obviously, as community members, constituents, want our elected officials to step up to the plate and put a plan forward if the gas pipeline company won't do it, to make sure renewables are part of the mix.
All right, let's go get them.
All right.
I'm feeling unprepared, but I'm usually feeling unprepared, and if I waited until I was ready before I did anything, I'd never do anything.
Hi, how you doing? Here, come on in. How can I help you today?
So how'd it go, Matt? How'd it go?
Well, so I'm glad Ruthie was able to talk about her experience on the walk, because that gave an actual, real, tangible experience for people that were concerned about it and the actions that were happening along the way, support groups, all the organizations. So it's not like just one single person out there, but it takes numerous amounts of people with lots of energy to create actions that span 4 days long, feed, house, and create interesting situations for people to interact with other people and talk about this important issue. And we're able to continue that today in Jim McGovern's office with Ruthie speaking with Keith, the aide of James McGovern. And I was able to put in my little bit and contribute to this effort of many people. So yeah, I'm pretty psyched.
Yeah, and I'm really glad you were there, Matt, because you actually had, like, concrete ideas and suggestions in the direction we should move, and I'm just like, oh, let me tell you some stories about the walk.
All right.